C2M. Number 6A.
And now, at the end of that fifth subject, Mrs. Eddy said that the children should be allowed to remain children in knowledge and should become men and women only through growth in the understanding of what? Of man's higher nature. So what follows afterwards is to show what is man's higher nature. And so we come to the sixth subject of truth, and you will see at once that the whole tonality changes. That up to this point, through the first five subjects, Mrs. Eddy was dealing mostly with the mortal and how the mortal progeny could be improved, that this would be the first step for us to undertake. But then here she comes and shows man's higher nature. I have epitomized the sixth subject of truth as spiritual unity in truth brings forth through what? The qualities of truth, namely through a metaphysical understanding, the higher nature of man. Now, for the first time, she appeals to the metaphysical understanding of what man is. And by the way, this is the first time in the textbook that she uses the term metaphysical. So it has taken her over 60 pages to arrive at the point where we have to exchange, so to say, the good human and divine qualities for metaphysical concepts and metaphysical ideas. We will see at once the very different tonality that she introduces here when we start out by asking now, what is that metaphysical understanding that is necessary in order to get a higher human sense, a higher nature of man, so that you are not dependent on being the progeny of mortals, of being the progeny of mortal instincts and animal instincts? How can we save ourselves from being a mortal? And the first tone here in truth as mind is that it lies in the recognition that the divine mind, and not erring human beliefs, take care of the human body. Now, it is no more that the parents, through the law of heredity, define what kind of a body we have, if we have a healthy body or not a healthy body, a healthy mind or not a healthy mind. Now she lifts everything right out of that to a metaphysical understanding of what man is, and begins with the following statement in mind. We first take the first two paragraphs as mind. We must not attribute more and more intelligence to matter. Can you see now she reverses that matter has intelligence, that there is hereditary laws at work, but less and less if we would be wise and healthy. Now, suddenly, to be wise and healthy, to have a wise mind and to have a healthy body, is now dependent on attributing less and less to the law of heredity, to the intelligence in matter. Now it is the divine mind, for the first time, which forms the bud and blossom, will care for the human body even as it closes the lily. Is that clear that now she brings our origin back to the divine mind, that no more to our ancestors, no more to a mortal propagation, but that man has its basis and its origin in the divine mind, that the divine mind forms, so to say, and cares for the human body? Do you see the completely different standpoint than what we had just one page before. Where one page before, you remember that she said that if it would be, well, you remember what it was. I can't just find it, but it was there where she said that noble parents naturally bring forth noble minds and healthy bodies. And now suddenly they are no more the parents that bring forth the healthy mind and the healthy body, but the divine mind. So we get here a solution for the fact that each one can say, well, this is not dependent on me, what my parents have brought forth. I can't be made responsible for that. Therefore, should I be the victim of my parents? And here we break that law of heredity and say, no, whatever my human parents were, that has nothing to do with me. It is the divine mind that wanted me, that wished me. I am desired by the divine mind, and I am formed by the divine mind. That's my parents. So, but let no mortal interfere with God's government by thrusting in laws of erring human concept. For instance, the law of heredity would be such a law of erring human concept. So we can defy that law of heredity by filling our thoughts with what are our ancestors, our parents, namely the parent mind. So the higher nature of man is not governed by the lower. Here again, therefore, the higher nature of man is not governed by the animal nature, by the mortal nature of man. If it were, the order of wisdom would be reversed. If the lower would govern the higher, then the divine order would be reversed. Our false views of life hide eternal harmony and produce the ills of which we complain. Can you see now the qualities through which truth is now bringing forth a higher form of man is through understanding. Here it is that we should not believe or should not have false views of life, that false views, in contrast to right views, which is a form of understanding, it's the false views of life that hide really our eternal harmony, and they are that which bring forth, produce the ills of which we complain. So we should not complain and put the blame on our parents and say, well, that's not my fault, it's your fault. We can't do that anymore the moment we come to the sixth subject. Isn't it terrific to see how Mrs. Eddy would build up a subject and build it up, and later on, because she said this is a transitionary stage, this is a stage from mortality to spirituality, that at a certain stage she would say, and all what I have said before, right before, at the turn of life, this is not the law. This is a false law, and I correct it if I rise higher, but only if I rise higher. If we do not rise higher to the sixth subject, then we better obey the laws of the fifth subject, of having a better progeny, by a better mentality. But here we can take it and see the higher nature of man rules the lower nature, or the divine order would be reversed. Because mortals believe in material laws and reject the science of mind, again you see, mind, she didn't say before that man is the product of mind in the fifth subject, up to the fifth subject really. So not always the effect of a mortal cause. Here now, she says, mortals should not believe in material laws and not reject the science of mind, This does not make materiality first and the superior law of soul last. You would never think that flannel was better for warding off pulmonary disease than the controlling mind, if you understood what? The signs of being. So, understanding the signs of being, therefore now, being led in the sixth subject into being itself and not away from mortal and the human plane of things, we begin to see that the higher rules the lesser as dominion over the lesser. And so if we take refuge in the signs of mind, then we free ourselves of the lower law. We free ourselves of mortality, of the law of heredity. So we are introduced here that mind is the cause, is the creator that produces men and brings forth men, that forms and molds men. And now in the next one we see that it is spirit that is introduced as a synonymous term for the origin of men. So we come to spirit, which shows again that spirit, the pure and good, is the only source of man's being. Again, we see what we have said before. The moment we come to the subtone of spirit, it's usually purity that is the subtone. Here too, in science, man is the offspring of spirit. Can you see why she accentuates and says in science, man is the offspring of spirit? Because up to now she has shown man as the offspring of parents, but she never said that that was science. She always only pointed out that there were human laws at work that can lead us higher, that can be used for the spiritual good. But now, when we come to truth, it is showing now in science, not in the human belief, man is the offspring of spirit, no more of parents. He's the beautiful, good and pure constitute his ancestry. You see, two pages before she said, well, parents are our ancestors. And now she says, no, in science, that's another realm. That's a completely different plane of thinking and level of thinking. In science, this is not so. His origin is not like that of mortals in brute instinct, nor does he pass through material conditions prior to reaching intelligence. Well, on page 61, two pages before, she said, well, his origin may be in brutal instinct. We may be the children of gross parents. And she was speaking there that we are not the outcome of the animal instinct. Now it is not brute instinct. Now suddenly it's the good and beautiful that is our origin. So it's not in brute instinct, nor does it pass through material condition prior of reaching intelligence. Spirit, God, is his primitive and ultimate source of being. So we had first in the subtone of mind, that mind forms and forms and cares for the human body, and that mind creates man. Now here is that man is the offspring of spirit, that is his primitive and ultimate source of being, and God is his father, and life is the law of his being. So in these two subtones, Mrs. Eddy lifts, so to say, the whole question of marriage and progeny to that higher level of the synonymous terms and says, mind is the creator and spirit brings forth. Then we come to the next tone of soul, and we have here that in Seoul both sexes have equal human rights. Suddenly she corrects what she has said before, that she said, well, the woman should look after the household, the man should look after his business and so on. Now, suddenly, on the higher level, she looks into the future and can see that both sexes are equal. As we said, that modern law tries to enforce that legislation that gives men and women equal chances and treat them equal. So she says, civil law at her time establishes very unfair differences between the rights of the two sexes. Now, this is still true in modern countries, that men and women have not equal rights. They have equal rights in some respect, but not in every respect. I think it's true also in this country that under a similar condition, a woman can earn less than a man, that the pay is less. This is true in Germany, this is true in Switzerland, but in all these countries, we are working very hard and we are now working out legal laws, civil laws that will do away with that, so that we really want to establish now in every way the equality of the sexes. So civil law establishes very unfair difference between the rights of the two sexes. Can you see again, this is a statement that is written 100 years ago, which is no more applicable today or will no more be applicable in 10 years or 15 years. But it's still true because she wants to say, look here, I give you the way. And on that way, you start out with that unfair differences, but really the future will be the equality. Christian Science furnishes no precedent for such injustice, showing in Christian Science we know that men and women are anyway equal, that men and women are anyway qualities of state, of qualities of thought, and each one should be able to embrace both qualities, so Christian Science doesn't establish that unfair difference. And civilization mitigates it in some measure. Well, in another 20 years, this will not be true, but we'll say in the same measure as Christian Science, or in the same measure as Christian Science looks at men and women. Still, it is a marvel why usage should accord women less rights than does either Christian Science or civilization. Again, a sentence that belongs to more or less the past. Now, it is interesting to have a textbook on eternal laws and suddenly find a chapter that states laws or states make statements that are temporary right and are temporary so and not eternally so, which is what she wants to do with this chapter. Our laws are not impartial, to say the least, in their discrimination as to the person, property, and parental claims of the two sexes. It's still the same tone of the equality of the sexes, and at her time, certainly, she could see the differences very much. She even says, if the elective franchise for women will remedy the evil without encouraging difficulties of greater magnitude, let us hope it will be granted. Well, in the meantime, it has been granted. So, again, we have a statement that shows she could see that there is a development going on the level of civil law, on the level of moral law, because the spiritual law is the ultimate, and that will define how legal and moral law will adapt themselves to the spiritual law as time goes on. But she says, we can't do that at once. That's not possible. We have to make concession to the age. And therefore, here are some of these concessions. She said, well, she's not quite sure if the elective franchise for women will remedy the evil. If it does, she says, she doesn't say, let's have it right away, 100 years ago. And we know it took quite a while until the suffragettes went on the road and demonstrated. That was in the war, World War I, and after the World War I, and little by little, women really received their equal rights in voting. So let us hope it will be granted. A feasible as well as rational means of improvement. At present, it's the elevation of society in general. So she speaks about her time, so it's the elevation of society in general, and the achievement of a nobler race of legislation, a race having higher aims and motives. Again, a very wise indication, saying more or less, before we have the equality of the sexes, let's have first wise people and a nobler race for legislation that will stand up for the equality of the sexes and will fight for the equality of the sexes and against discrimination. Let's have that. Well, here in this country, I understand also, you know, you had another question, the equality of white people and black people, though that was, if I'm well informed, but I don't know if I am, I shouldn't talk about it, but that was in the Constitution, but it was not always practiced. And so there had to be a movement, and only in recent times, to establish more and more the equality of white and black. But that's again a differentiation, that's again a discrimination, which had to work out slowly, that couldn't be demonstrated, or couldn't be practice from one day to the other. It took some time because one sees that these are things that where one has to overcome quite a lot of traditional and historic atmosphere. If a dissolute husband deserts his wife, certainly the wronged and perchance impoverished woman should be allowed to collect her own wages, enter into business agreement, hold real estate, deposit funds, and own her children free from interference. Well, to a great extent, this has been accomplished in the legislation. At her time, apparently, this was not so. And again, we can see the evolution that has taken place during 100 years. And so we can say, well, what will happen in another 100 years? We always look back and say, yes, there was a development in the past, and that development was always going forward and forward, but we never really think that it will have to go forward also in the future. We always think now we live in our time, and that's the climax of an evolution. But actually, history should always be really a history of the future. Only when we make history of the future, we can really bring forth the old history into the future. And so we should extrapolate, so to say, the development that has taken place up to now, over 100 years, and extrapolate it into the future, make history of the future, which will show that everything will drive towards seeing that man is spiritual and wholly spiritual, that he is not a human concept, nor a mortal concept, nor a corporeal concept, and that man is just one man, namely the compound idea man. Or we go to the next subtone of principle, where we see that that unity with truth will show forth the higher nature of man through principle, namely that man includes both masculine and feminine qualities and is one with all men. We already had seen in spirit as mind that we must have the female mind and the masculine mind as one mind. Now here she gives the higher sense of that unity and shows that really the legislation should attain that. She speaks, so to say, about the 3 degrees in regard to legislation. The first degree she depicts here in the first sentence and says, "Want of uniform justice is a crying evil caused by the selfishness and humanity of men." So want of uniform justice has been for a long time, if not up to now, a crying evil in all the countries. We only have to read the cultural history of all the high civilizations. Still, in all those high civilizations, we find a want of uniform justice and crying evil as a crying evil. And always the churches were could be paid off. They were unjust. Huh? The kings didn't rule justly. The poor were always suppressed. That was a crying evil from ancient history up to present history. There is seldom a country that we can find today or a culture that we can find today where there is no corruption going on, where there is no terrorism on the highest plane going on. I mean not corruption in the mafia, not terrorism in the mafia, but corruption up on the government level, terrorism up on the government level. Just think of Libya and so on, and of many other countries where we have want of uniform justice as a crying evil.